And a warm welcome back to all our listeners. It's 2020 and the Esports Central podcast has returned. I mean, I feel like it's like a whole year since I've heard that shitty music play prophecy. How about you?
I don't really listen to the music. I just sort of skip the first 10 seconds or so that I don't also hear your introductions.
Oof. Snail, what do you think about that?
I get where it's coming from. Normally, I skip whole podcasts. You know, and I just mute you out of it, so I really understand.
I mean, dude, like, that app that you wrote where it just auto-mutes anything Camille says is like an app that it really has contributed to the world.
People don't understand. The entire Esports Central podcast was just a publicity stunt to make my voice so annoying that when Snare finally launches his app, he just becomes a billionaire straight off the get-go.
Well, dude, they do say it takes 20 years of hard work to become an overnight success, so...
We're still grinding, bro.
So what you guys think is a decent Esports Central podcast is just the next level Team Elon Musk version 2, you know, just trailblazers in the business world right now.
Right.
Is Elon Musk a trailblazer?
Yo. I mean, come on, he's
a trailblazer at like making shit up about like the companies that he runs. So I guess you could say that.
He's a PR trailblazer. Let's give credit where credit is due, right? No modern man has learned how to weaponize his online fandom like Elon Musk has.
Yeah.
So, you know, credit where credit is due.
I feel like my man Donald Trump could argue against that, dude.
Nah, Donald Trump, for all his faults, right? For all his faults, for the most part, Donnie T fights his own battles. Dumb battles that make no sense. But, you know, if Trump is beefing with you, he's going to call you out himself. He's not going to be like, oh, my fans should take a look at this idiot or whatever.
All right, so now that everybody's hooked on the Elon Musk thing, you guys got to know that my business plan I gave before was just a hoax of the host. Version 3 is actually Elon Musk is now going to listen to this podcast and then buy Snare's app. Then when it fails, it's his loss.
Well, I mean, Snare's app only blocks your voice, Camille.
Yeah. Just yours. Yeah, nobody else's.
So there's no app to block Elon Musk's Twitter, just straight up, like other than the Twitter function itself, you know, because that can't make us any money.
The Twitter program or the Twitter, what is that? The, you know, it's like whenever you log into Twitter, it's like here are the top tweets.
Oh yeah, the algorithm.
I'm pretty certain I put it to latest, but okay.
All right, so as you guys can see, all our old listeners, and hopefully we have new listeners now in the new year, the shit talk is still real. That will never stop. But we do have some announcements. This one is sad for some people on the podcast. Happy for other people on the podcast. No, I'm kidding. It's sad for all of us, even for me. But Lord Glenn has departed the podcast. Another one bites the dust. So bye-bye. Bye-bye to GK. He will be missed. Even when he's talking about LOL, I'll be missing him. And my pillow will be missing.
Is this like a horror movie where there's like just the final girl at the end?
And who's going to be the last one standing, Prof? That is the question.
Well, I mean, it's probably the person that it's like, you know, it's like it's the one that's like the most uncorrupted. Because that's how it always works. It's always like, you know, it's like the girl that doesn't have sex and the girl that doesn't drink. Like that's always the one that's alive at the end.
All right, so Virgin Prof taking that. I'm kidding.
Didn't set you up for that.
So Glenn's kicked the bucket, but we have replaced him. Okay, he hasn't been replaced, but our sub from last year, Snare, says he's actually going to come on the podcast. So I know nobody knew Snare was the sub, but this year, Snare, are you going to be more consistent with us?
I'll be out here. Okay, you know why I'm going to be consistent, right? I just want the end of this year to finish where somebody makes a meme of the Virgin Glenn on the left and the Chad Snare. So it'll be worth doing the entire podcast just to get that one meme, and I'll be fine.
Whoa. All right, challenge is out there. That's a hashtag New Year's resolution right there, I gotta say.
I'm prepared, but like on the real, I'm going to be out here. I was a bit of a reclusive shut-in for 2019. And that shit's got to end. So, well, this is always a good place to be able to be out here. You know, it's about subject that I love and things that I'm about. And plus, I'm one of the few people on earth capable of reining your ass in. So, you know, somebody's got to do it. This is
the only one that can rein Camille in is his mom.
Oh, my mom's savagery's on another level. But that's for Skype groups only, all right? So, yeah, I think the saddest thing about Glenn departing is actually, it's Snare's new announcement. He has to take on the role of League of Legends because Dota's just dying, man. We got another Dota guy on here. Dota's dead, Snare.
Dead game, bro. dead game, bro. Today I cast a game, a Chinese Dota game, where first blood over 10 minutes or something. Dude, 10 minutes, 48 seconds. Dead game. Pointless.
Okay, but Prof, can we blame the Dota dying there, or is it just that that Chinese Dota is super slow?
Sorry, what'd you say?
I said, there, can we actually blame Dota dying, or is that just Chinese Dota in a nutshell? I think Prof's TeamSpeak died. Oh, he's back.
Prof's TeamSpeak is basically a microcosm of Dota, bro.
I mean, to be fair to, like, the Dota communities, they pretty much claim every time or every year that Dota is dying, so...
That is true. But, you know, you ever heard the story about Wolf? The boy who cried Wolf prophecy?
Yeah, but, I mean, eventually people just stopped listening to that kid. So that's pretty much what's happening right now, is people are just not listening to the kids that keep crying that Dota's dying.
Okay, I think the biggest differentiation from the boy who cried Wolf and the Dota fan is that nobody was listening in the first place. Like, Valve just don't give a fuck. So it's all good. We can carry on crying on the subreddit. Hopefully our game survives, but if it doesn't, we always have LOL, right, Snare?
Yeah, there has to be eventually, right? Eventually, I'll accept this as a legitimate esport instead of just a tier 2 knockoff. You know, maybe while I'm just channeling the spirit of Glenn, it'll eventually come to me. It'll be like, fine, I guess this has to be a real game.
Right? I can respect that. I can respect that. Faker fanboys, till we die, we're announcing it before we even start the League of Legends.
But yeah. What wasn't there that like article that came out where China offered Faker $10 million to come play for them?
I saw that. So there was two reports, right? One that a LPL team offered him $10 million to play, $10 million USDs, and the other one that NA LCS team offered him. They just gave him a blank check.
No, like, I can tell you which NA team did that, by the way.
What was it? Who was it?
Team Liquid.
Oh.
Because Team Liquid's policy is that even if they know he'll never accept it, if they don't try, they can't confirm that he wouldn't have accepted it.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't blame him. Does he really want to play with half an elevator there, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, think about if you're the American team that had Faker.
Yeah, no, true.
That's, I mean, it's like any NBA team saying like, oh, well, you know, like we did actually try to get LeBron.
Oh. Hey man, even in sports, sometimes you have to follow the logic of you gotta shoot your shot, yo.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't take the chance, you'll never know. What is it like? The one that always misses the shot you don't take.
Yeah.
Oh, Wayne Gretzky coming in clutch here. Yeah. Oh. All right, so I think it's time we kick off our main story for the night. And while we're doing that, I'm also about to announce that we're kind of taking a different path here on the podcast. It's not going to be so many different topics of news. It's going to be that one big subject. So if you hate the episode from the start, you can just turn it the hell off. It's not going to be nothing fun for you at the end of the show. And of course, that we're missing our Q&A for this week because our editor is dying. I think he's got the bubonic plague. It's just a rough thing for him at the moment, you know? Rip Sargon.
Feels bad, man.
Yeah, I mean, Sargon is just a small individual who happens to get along fine some days and most days just doesn't.
I think the most shocking thing to me is I didn't know that a bubonic plague could fit in a conduit that are that small, you know, but he managed to do it. I'm impressed. 2K19.
Yeah, I mean, the bubonic plague came from, like, fleas on rats, bro. Like, and as small as Sargon is, he is slightly larger than a flea.
Oh, honestly, I thought you were going to say a rat and I was going to just say fake news straight up.
Honestly, I'm just surprised that there's something that entered Sargon's bloodstream which didn't just immediately die on contact with all that salt.
I get you. All right, so let's get into our topic. Okay, enough Sargon bashing. He's our editor. We make fun of him a lot, but we kind of love him, maybe, deep down, very deep down. So our main topic for tonight is actually not a new topic. It's our probably most talked about topic throughout the last year and the year before that. It's the Overwatch League. And in its current format, or year that's taking off right now, there's a lot of questions going out around it. I mean, they've lost both the Monte Cristo and Doha from their talent. Oh, they've lost numerous other talent.
I think let's lay the groundwork. Is that the reason why this year is like so important is because this year is like where they actually become a global league, which they've really not been in name before. So essentially what that means is that the Overwatch League, you're called like the London Spitfire. You're supposed to be playing in London. I think both London and Paris are playing on the East Coast of America. But basically, each team is now flying to play whoever they are, or not every week, but the idea is that if you are like the Los Angeles Chargers or whatever the hell it is, you know, it's what are they? That's the Gladiators and Valiant, the LA Valiant and the Gladiators. Now, if you are like the New York Excelsior, New York will fly to Los Angeles to play like those teams, and then Los Angeles will fly back. Now, that's never really been attempted in esports, and if you just look at like just the sheer numbers of like travel miles that these kids are supposed to rack up, it's something like 70,000 miles traveling for some of the like the really big teams, which is insane. Yeah. 70,000 miles a year.
That's preposterous.
That's like more. That's more than the actual LA Lakers fly throughout an entire year.
I actually have the numbers for the NBA teams. It was 49,000 miles the NBA teams travel throughout the season. And in Overwatch League, they're going to be traveling 76,000 miles. Yeah. That is a big difference, bro.
That's nuts, yeah. Dude. In a year. That's crazy.
And to make it worse, that like compared to, say, teams that travel for football or you know, NBA or whatever, generally those teams are traveling within a single country, within a single region. This is going to be international travel. So time zones also get involved. Jet lag becomes a major factor. And the big elephant in the room, visas.
Yep.
Visas.
Apparently those are solved, but who knows?
Yeah, but you know, how often have we heard, guys, don't worry, don't stress, we've solved this visa issue, but it always is something that crops up. You can never really predict how governments are going to react about the issue.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's the background. Now, obviously, Camille was saying, it's like they've now lost a couple of pieces of talent as well.
I mean, we can even extend this more than just the homestand games taking effect this year. 2020 was, they've been talking about it for a long time throughout the Overwatch community, and through Blizzard's grapevine, that this is the breakout year, right? And when this is the year that's supposed to be the biggest and bestest, and this is the, then just before that, you have your top talent being like, Chief, this ain't it. I'm packing up and leaving now. It is a very, very scary sign, don't you think, Prophecy?
Well, I mean, like, it's especially, it's very worrying because Monty's just the one that we're talking about now. Mm. And obviously the way he phrased his like goodbye message was like very, very interesting to read, and it should certainly ring a couple of alarm bells, because he said that while the old like management was still there, he got along with them famously, but like the new people that are running it, like he couldn't come to agreements with them on like multiple things, which is like Monty's been in esports 15 years, so if he's saying that like he's not happy about things, and remember he's well known for criticizing League of Legends extensively for it, or Riot in particular for its problems, and largely getting away with it. So if he's just deciding to tap out of Overwatch entirely, like that's a pretty big gamble for him to just walk out there. You know, it's like he was on probably the fattest contract of all of the talent there, him and Doha, I would guess, maybe one or two others. But like him walking out the door and saying like no, he just couldn't get along with the current league management is like very, very worrying, especially because remember, right as we were hitting like the peak of Overwatch last year, they announced that Nate Nanza, who designed the entire league, was walking out and going to Epic Games.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if you heard the NBA commissioner was walking out tomorrow, like to go and join the NFL, it's like, wait, what? Why? Like what's going on? Like why would he suddenly just up and leave? So Nate Nanza walked out. Then you got a whole bunch of other people that, you know, like maybe they're not as well known, but like they certainly long term Blizzard employees and people that have been in the esports industry and you know, maybe not directly involved, but certainly have been around esports and particularly Blizzard's esports for many, many years, and they've been walking out the door. Monty leaves. What is it? I think he left, was it New Year's Day? It was a couple of days later or something that he announced that he was walking out. Then a couple of, or like the next day we had Puckett, who has been their primary panel host, amongst others. It's like, when you're losing those kind of pieces of talent, those are not small people to be getting, you know, to be losing. And it is a very worrying trend that they all seem to be like, oh no, you know, we're happy to go but either freelance or just like walk out entirely. It's like those guys must have been on pretty big contracts. So either you weren't renewing their contract, which already starts asking questions like, why aren't you renewing their contracts? Or they themselves have decided not to renew the contract, which says also a ton.
I mean, the way it's sold as well is that the Overwatch League is the pinnacle. So why, where would Monty and Doha be able to go up if the Overwatch League is way ahead of everybody else, right? You think about the kind of brands and stuff involved with Overwatch League. What they're trying to do, supposedly, is to be so much bigger than the rest of the scene in terms of global esports.
I mean, Monty's wife used to be the, I think she was the manager of the Overwatch team for a London Spitfire. She quit last year. Cloud9 has sold off two GOAT candidate players to other teams and are now basically min-maxing with like young and up-and-coming players and, you know, like trying to sort of eke out, try and survive on like the breadline of players now from the Korean scene. It's like, how the hell do you sell two GOAT candidates at their positions and then like pick up others? Like that something just doesn't seem 100% when you see a big team like Cloud9 or I mean, London Spitfire. Like London Spitfire, as they're calling themselves, like when they start dropping talent of that level, like there's got to be questions asked, and it's not the only team. How many players have retired or you know just cited burnout over the last year? And if they're citing burnout and they literally play in a studio for the last 2 years, what's going to happen when they have to travel 76,000 miles
internationally?
It's insane. Like CS:GO players might play that, but even they've now over the last couple of years decided like, we're going to take like month-long breaks where we aren't traveling. There is no option like that with Overwatch.
And I think to further compound the issue here is that because of how Overwatch League is run in general, there's no other game in town that you can go to and say, all right, fine, if the conditions here aren't great, we can try and maybe make a plan elsewhere. It's either this or nothing. So effectively, if you're leaving OWL as talent or one of the larger teams as a player, you're effectively just leaving Overwatch.
Yeah, you can't go to Contenders because Blizzard has basically gutted Contenders entirely. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, we're leaving. If you leave here, you are leaving Overwatch as an entirety. So we have to think about if somebody still felt new knowing that, and obviously they're behind the scenes, so they know this more presciently than any of us, knowing that and you still would rather make the decision and say, you know what, guys, that's fine. I'll make a plan out there in the cold. I don't need to actually be here. Like, tells us it's not a good sign. It's very foreboding for an entire thing for Overwatch League and as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually so crazy to think about it. The list of names that have left the Overwatch League. I mean, Jason Baker, who was a big part of putting together, making Overwatch a watchable game, he left. You have the guys from...
He didn't leave. He got fired.
They
just didn't renew his contract, like, straight up. They were just like, no, it's cool. We've taken all of your, like, knowledge and, you know, like, your building that you've done, and you can just leave now. Thanks very much.
Oh, peace.
That guy is like, he has not been particularly happy with how he was removed from the Overwatch League. Like you get the distinct impression that man, I wouldn't say he got screwed, but like it certainly didn't end amicably between him and Blizzard.
That is a very good distinction to make there. I mean, Richard Lewis in his brilliant article on DeSoto about the Overwatch League woes, so to speak, even lists there the OGs from the MLG staff that the company that the Overwatch League bought out, Sundance, Di Giovanni, and Adam Apalica?
Apicella. Adam Apicella. That's MLG, basically. So
yeah.
I mean, if you've ever been involved in card or know anything about card, MLG was like the standard bearer. They have still, they ran the event that most people consider to be the high watermark for quality of a CSGO major, MLG Columbus. That's still massively fondly remembered. Unfortunately, they were like soon afterwards purchased by Blizzard, which meant that they could never do another major for CSGO. But it's still, it's like in the top three events ever run. You'll almost never hear any stories behind the scenes of talent or anybody that worked at the event having any problems with it. It was apparently fantastically run, and MLG had a fantastic history of being incredibly well run by Adam Apicella and others. And they were bought out by Blizzard. They were converted into basically Blizzard's in-house tournament production. And Adam Apicella has now walked out the door again. It's like, why is your technical director for your production side walking out?
Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking. I mean, you look at, again, like you mentioned, Kim Fan earlier. So you have you buy out one of the best studios in the esports as a whole, the MLG. You let the staff walk out. You have Kim Fan, who was also a big part of Blizzard marketing and stuff, also gone. Jason Baker, the guy who, as again Richard Lewis lists, worked on Emmy Award nominated TV shows with 15 years of broadcast producer broadcast experience as a producer, get fired. And then you're like, to top it all off, Nate Nanza leaves last year. I mean, Prof gave the great analogy about the NBA commissioner just walking out. I mean, David Stern, one of the legendary NBA commissioners, passed away recently, and like, his tenure in the NBA lasted 30 years, right? This man was revered till today. I mean, players are going to wear armbands for the entire season to commemorate this guy, because this is his vision and he grew this thing. And Nate Nanza, whether like, where criticism or not, the Overwatch League was setting a new precedent out the things they did.
Nate Nanza marketed, like, in terms of pure marketing, the Overwatch League is probably the most successful I've ever seen an esports league be marketed. It was ludicrously well marketed. So whatever criticisms that we have of Overwatch League, it was an incredible marketing achievement in getting buy-in from big ticket players.
So I mean, Snare, when you're looking at this, right? This is all going on. These things were happening all from last year, and now obviously the most apparent knocks on our doors, or on the Overwatch door rather, is that Monty and Doa are leaving as well.
Like, no, it's only Monty. Doa is still staying.
No. He announced he's departing from Overwatch as well yesterday.
Did he? Yesterday, all right. That
just announced it early this morning for us.
All right, okay. No, I hadn't seen that one yet. That's mega surprising.
Doa's out as well.
Doa's the quiet one. Monty will make a lot of noise. Like, you'll always hear about like stuff from Monty. Like, Doa's very, very often the quiet one. So if Doa's also walking out, I mean, that says that's just going to contribute to this whole situation. It's getting very, very worrying.
I mean, I'm going to quote Thorin word for word here. Sorry for my profuse language. I'm quoting Thorin here. He said, if you beefing with Doa, likelihood of you being the cunt is 100%. It's like, I was like, damn, but that does showcase Doa's personality pretty well, I think. Even though it's a crude example.
Doa is like one of the most easygoing people in esports. Like, it's mental.
Yeah. There are those people that if you find yourself on the wrong side of them, you probably deserved it and you probably earned it. And Doa strikes me as one of those people. You know what I also think is going to be an issue, right? This is what I suspect about... Okay, so we're all in agreement that many of these, with both in terms of the talent changes and the way that they want to run the league as a whole, right?
There's a lot of, like, red flags being raised right now.
Yeah, many, many red flags, right? And generally, whenever red flags like this get raised continually around a particular esport, it usually signals the decline of said esport, right? This is further compounded by the fact that over time, viewership for OWL has been going down. The player base isn't nearly as big as it could be, or it's not at the level that to sustain a game with such grand ambitions, right, in terms of its esports potential. And as time goes on, fewer and fewer people who aren't already involved in Overwatch are having any kind of real interest towards getting involved in Overwatch. I don't remember the last time that somebody who isn't already an Overwatch player is like, oh, snap, dog. I started playing this new hype. It was amazing. It's great. I'm having myself such a good time. I've never, basically, I know anecdotally tons of people who go from, say, Overwatch to Fortnite or Apex, but I've almost never heard the opposite of somebody saying, I play Apex and Fortnite almost exclusively, but now I'm going to be jumping over to Overwatch because it's just a better game or whatever.
I mean, to be fair, those games are newer. So that is something to point out. Like, I mean...
Although games are definitely newer, and I think in large measure, a lot of the decline, quote-unquote, of Overwatch could probably be attributed to their rise in some way, as there's like a limited pool of these potential players. I mean,
like, the one thing that you'd have to say, though, is that, like, even if those games came out and have contributed to the decline, League of Legends still does pretty solid numbers. Like, we're not seeing, like, a drastic drop in viewership with League of Legends in the last few years. Like, it's not what it once was, but it's not like this epic slide that we've seen from Overwatch at times. Like, Overwatch has had like a mad drop. The highest I think their numbers have ever been, okay, not that their numbers have ever been. Let's say the first night that it came out, I think they hit 400,000 on the first ever night that Overwatch League ran. And now they're sitting at about 100,000 average.
Yeah.
Like, that's... League of Legends has way higher numbers than that, even in their downturn, which is like, that's got to be worrying for anybody that's running Overwatch, especially because like the money that's been spent to get the Overwatch League running is, I mean, it's what, close to $1 billion, if not more?
Probably more, dude. Like, just, I'm just thinking about, remember those insane valuations at the beginning and how much you had to buy in to get into teams, which was like absurd amounts of money. And that's
especially because, actually, I mean, League of Legends, what, your franchises were 10 million.
Yeah.
And
Overwatch League, 25 like, million starting.
Okay, yeah, I mean, 25 for, I think, Los Angeles, which is, I mean, Quibble as much as you want, but like Los Angeles, because it is a much bigger viewership market, they probably get more. But it's still like 25 million. This game hasn't even been out like 3 years at the time. Like, I'm confused. How does that work?
Yeah. How does that work, right? Where does this valuation come from? And I have a suspicion that if nothing changes, which, you know, you need to rely upon the wisdom of those currently at the head of Blizzard Activision's running of Overwatch, which, yeah, we have many reasons to be skeptical about whether or not they'll handle this well. But as the year goes and as time starts to pass, I don't think... So now we're seeing players leave, talent leave, right? How soon until we start seeing investors leave and start seeing teams being sold by their primary shareholders? How soon before, basically, until we start seeing, hey, there's a random Chinese billionaire who's trying to move money, or hey, there's this Russian oligarch that wants to expand his portfolio and now has announced he's going to buy some Overwatch team. And then that becomes like sort of like the new norm where you're just shuffling around the property rather than actually building up teams.
Because if you think about it, like Overwatch League in large part has been a test run for the COD League, which is coming out. And if you believe the stories about COD League, some of those franchises were 60 million.
What?
Whoa. That's the stories. Whether that's true, I don't know. But think about the nuts. 60 million for a COD League. And they wanted to run it the same as Overwatch League. And now it's been announced, no, they're going to go to like a tournament circuit. But why? I mean, if Overwatch League is your trial run, why are you suddenly switching how your entire format is run?
Yeah.
That surely smacks of like something's not lacquer there. Like, if your league is so successful, why are you not using the same
model. Format? And it probably doesn't bode well overall that, for the most part, do we actually have any confirmation from anybody that anything is profitable in OWL?
Well, I mean, if you believe the Blizzard stories, like the problem is the only thing that you can believe from Blizzard is their investor meetings, which is like every quarter, and the financials. And those are not going to tell you anything about the leagues in general, because the information that they're forced to release is not going to tell you individually how the Overwatch League is running. It'll tell you how Blizzard as a whole is running. But I mean, remember, Blizzard also announced in their investor call last year, oh, we've done, what is it, record revenues for the last year, while they were like offlaying or laying off, what is it, 300 employees or something?
Yeah.
1,800, if I remember.
Yeah. I mean, we've made more money than ever before. We're also getting rid of like 1,000+ employees.
I mean,
those two things wouldn't happen to have anything to do with one another, would they?
No.
Definitely not. The problem is this, right? Overwatch can work. We've been beating on Overwatch League for quite a while, but the simple fact of the matter is that Overwatch League can work, but they need to be more honest and they need to be like more accepting of how things need to be run, because they're trying to brute force something and that almost never ever works.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you want to talk about like execution of these things that are doing, which could, as we say, be successful models, I mean, let's give an example of why a lot of the talent have been saying they're pulling out. I think Monty is a big, I don't know what's the word, of big... this is what he said. I don't know what's the fancy word for it. But him and a lot of the other talent were saying that the reason that they're leaving these broadcasts is that they're not getting any creative freedom here. They just feel like...
They get told what to do.
To do a job. Yes, exactly. They don't get a chance to add value to the show in terms of contributing on what the things they should do, what they can do, like cool skits. I mean, I think the greatest example of Monty being Monty... I think this is arguably, in my opinion, the greatest esports skit we've ever seen was Monty at Worlds. I think in 2013 it was, where he came with the
train SKG, outfit. Yeah, the train
and then came out the SKG cards. And I mean, it was one of the most brilliant broadcast skits I've ever seen and probably we will ever see. That's what makes the show, right? And in Overwatch, yes, it's a very well produced and put together show, but you're not giving your talent that kind of freedom. Yeah. It's shocking. And if it's to the point where talent actually start leaving, that's a big concern for me.
But the problem is, like, if you look at, I mean, just think about just about any league, right? So let's look at the NFL. Almost all of their talent are like either well-known former players, so they have a personality that you can see, or they're, you know, like a respected older broadcaster that, again, like you understand their personality. Like you look at any sort of talking head show, you go to, what is it, I think ESPN FC. If you go and look there, they have a whole bunch of old players, but like each one of those guys has a personality. Now you go to the Overwatch League and you have Monty, you have Doa. These guys are like, I mean, Monty's been in esports 15 years. Puckett, massively well-known in the league. You have, I think it's Ubershout. It's like all these guys are incredibly well-known, but it's like they don't have the same level of creative freedom that they did when they were making their names.
Yeah.
And as soon as you do that, it's like you're neutering a large portion of why people tune in to watch. Because, yeah, the games are exciting, but half the time people are not necessarily watching an NBA game to watch the game. They're trying to like watch, oh, what is LeBron doing tonight, or you know, what was Kobe doing, what crazy nut stuff can the Golden State Warriors pull off tonight, type of thing. You know, it's like you watch it for the moments, and very often those moments are made with a crazy play and a great broadcasting performance. If you're trying to like force a certain way for your broadcasting to go, sure, I'm all about the family friendly angle, perfect. I don't have any problem with that. But like when you're trying to make them do certain things because that's the way it has to be done according to you, rather than allowing them the creative freedom within guidelines,
yeah,
it's going to impact the overall enjoyment of the league, because people tune in because they've gotten used to these personalities, you know, doing these sort of things. And you've never seen anything similar to that with Monty. I mean, I think the most recognized moment of Monty, at least to my mind, since I've, I mean, I don't watch much of the Overwatch League, but was the show match, I think, where Monty came out dressed as a member of My Chemical Romance from the Black Parade era. Like that's the most I know of Monty being able to do anything different in Overwatch League.
And the thing about whenever you do that, where you sort of, whenever you give instructions rather than give parameters, you can also tell from the talent themselves. You can actually see that somebody's enjoying their work less and less. Mm-hmm. And the day will come where it's no longer a production, no longer talent. They just, it's a guy basically reading from a script. Yeah. He's just here. All right. This is what the things they want me to say. I'm going to say them in that order. Game's finished. Thank you very much. Bye guys. You know, don't worry about me.
And the thing is, like, you might not be able to put your finger on it, but, like, it just feels like those broadcasts can eventually, they feel corporate and lifeless.
Yeah. I think that's the right word.
Like, so it's like watching a news program. Like, those people don't have a personality because they can't have a personality as a, you know, a news presenter. Mm. So, like, you'll almost never remember the individual presenter unless they've been there for years and years. But it's the nature of the job. They are required to act like that.
And that, yeah, 100%.
Sorry to cut you off this.
Oh, but I was going to say that, I'm just going to agree with him and say, no, but none of us are fans of newscasters unless they do something special and amazing. And like, yeah, we're only a fan of any particular newscaster when they get let off the leash. If they're on the leash, who gives a fuck about any of them?
Yeah, I mean, why would you want a generic person that says it, you know, says the same thing as everybody else? Like, what's the point in that?
Yeah.
And personality is important. I mean, let's quote Richard Lewis once again. He's saying that he worked across the road from Inside the NBA. It's like, spoiler alert, when the Inside the NBA is getting made, the great Ernie Johnson had input in how the show was ran. I mean, if you watch Inside the NBA today with Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal, I mean, you want to talk about broadcasting and stuff. Are these guys the most skilled broadcasters? No, nowhere near. But they have so much personality, so much rapport. That's probably the most watched probably sports show in the world. And it's highly entertaining because these guys get to be themselves. You get to hear Shaq talking about the glory days. You know Charles Barkley's insane history, and they're bringing their flavor to the game, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, the thing is, they also shred each other.
Exactly.
Like, you know, they'll always joke with Charles that, like, oh, he, you know, he's only got like one NBA championship type thing, and that he was never an MVP, et cetera, et cetera, and you know, all that kind of thing. It's like it adds to the richness of the show, because they can always talk about things like that. And you get the personalities from the people. And if it's a lifeless show, why would you keep turning in?
Yeah, 100%. I think a good point you made also earlier, Prof, is that it's not that it's just like talent are not given freedom. I mean, you gave the list of names there. This is the best in the business. Some of the best talent in the world. These guys were recruited for the purpose for the flagship league, the Overwatch League. And now it's a case of, this was not our vision, lads. We're walking out. It's really scary.
To make it scarier is the fact that because of the way that OWL has been run, right, and because of the lack of any outside Overwatch content writ large in general, the fact that even if they want to reverse course, right, we're just thinking of all the talent that's left right now, the people that they're going to have to replace them with, even if they are able to do the job, you know, efficiently, there is a reason why the other talent is at the top of their game. And the new people that you get in, because if you decided to go in this particular route, you're going to be getting, I'm not going to say that everybody's going to be second string, but let's be serious. People aren't going to be as good as the A-listers that have all just left.
Yep.
And you have this really weird situation where if down the line, OWL does decide, okay, crap, we screwed the pooch on this one. We should actually have more unrestrained talent. People should be able to put forth their actual selves rather than just simply the corporate persona we expect from them. The people you get to replace the A-listers might not actually be capable of doing that, at least not in a sufficiently entertaining way to draw more people.
Or it's
going to
take them years to build up that image.
Exactly. There's no time in between, right? Because right now, if there were outside tournaments that were happening or outside events that could be run, and if contenders wasn't completely gutted by Blizzard, then you could be like, all right, fine. You are the potential replacement for Monty or Doa. Do your thing, get better, and then we'll call you up when you're ready. Now you're thrust into the limelight, and you have to be good right now. And you don't have time to get better. And if you're not good right now, sorry, we're going to maybe try to get somebody else, or we're going to double down on the corporatism, neither of which is actually good overall for OWL, just as an entity and as a brand and as a viewing experience for the fans themselves.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a lot of small individual decisions that are going to have a massive impact on the quality of the league as a whole. And it's going to just contribute to like less and less people watching, because again, there's so many games that they play and so many irrelevant games. It's, you know, it's a problem with like every single league. Like, how many people actually will turn in to watch a, you know, like a mid-table clash in English football, in the English Premiership? Like, nobody, like, how many people are going to watch Stoke versus West Brom rather than Arsenal versus Man United?
Rather than just take a walk outside, Phil.
It's like, that's the problem, is that, like, you make so many games that, like, eventually people are just going to, like, well, you know, we'll watch the big ticket games, but we're not going to, like, concentrate as much on you know, like, the mid-table nonsense games. Now, with the Overwatch, you have, what is it? I think it's 24 teams at the moment? I might be incorrect, but, like, they play so many games and for so long.
There's,
like,
four different portions of a league format.
It's like, nuts. And, again, it's, like, with the way esports has been traditionally run, it's like one-off tournaments. You know, it's like, it'll be, apart from League of Legends, I'll give it that, there have been a couple of things that are now converting to leagues. But in general, it's, they run a set amount of time, and then they have a tournament at the end, right? But they're not 5-6 months long with just multiple teams playing against like other unknown teams. Like, a lot of these teams are still building their brands because, again, what did Overwatch do when they, or Overwatch League do when they originally came out? Oh, you know Cloud9, one of the biggest teams in the world. Sorry, you're not allowed to use any of that branding. You have to rename yourself to London Spitfire because we want to own all of your branding so that you can't gain anything. It's just like, what? Like, why are you actively inhibiting like people coming in, you know, with mad money? Like, Jerry Jones is the most successful NFL guy because he built the Cowboys into like a six, or it's what, I think they're $4 billion worth at the moment. Like, it's nuts when he started off with, I think he bought them for $125 million in the late 80s. They're now $4 billion worth.
Wow.
Right? But imagine Jerry wants to get involved in a new program and he wants to call them like the Dallas anything. Sorry, you have to like rename everything. You can't use the same branding, etc., etc. It's just like, why are you actively inhibiting this? Like, you're already behind the eight ball with how you're running this league.
Yeah.
And now you're going to make it even harder for the people that could give you a massive boost straight out of the gate.
Because it's not like there's people who aren't actually trying to say, hey, we want to be involved in esports or want to spread valuation in some way. But you're right that nobody wants to give up their own branding that you've worked hard for just to be able to make somebody else's company look good or somebody else's league look good.
Yeah, and especially because like you're tying a lot of these franchises down to a certain location. Like London Spitfire is owned by Cloud9, an American team based out of California. But now they're the London Spitfire. Like... What?
Hashtag that makes work? No sense.
The Gen G, the owner is a Chinese guy from Silicon Valley, but he owns the
Seoul Dynasty.
Seoul Dynasty. So, yeah, he's I think he is a Korean. He's a Korean or an American Korean based out of Silicon Valley, but he owns the Korean team based in Seoul. So why would the local Korean people, like, if they know who the owner is and they know he's like not a local Korean, like, they're immediately going to be less inclined to support him.
Yeah, my biggest pet peeve about the Overwatch though is that, like, the example you gave earlier about the English Premiership or even the NBA itself, I mean, it's 82 games in the NBA.
Yeah,
then you have two conferences having best of seven playoffs from quarterfinals till the finals till the great grand finals, right? But the reason this happens is because if you look at the NBA or the English Premiership, every game that gets played, there's TV broadcast rights sold for it. There's sponsors, multitude for the teams, for the players, for the individual networks, for the league itself. There's it's entirely monetized, right? So even though the ratings go down in the NBA season on TV because people don't want to watch some shit-ass fucking Atlanta Hawks versus... I don't know, the Phoenix Suns, but money's being made from everybody during that. So they don't have an incentive to change yet. But Overwatch League is like, okay, we're going to pretend to be the fucking NBA. And because we're pretending it, that's the reality. But the reality is now that everybody is fucking done with it.
The strangest thing is, right, if you go and look at the NBA are currently discussing a change to their format. So instead of having 84 games every season... They might have like a weekend where you have a small small tournament between the division.
Yeah,
and that's basically what esports is.
Yeah.
So why, if NBA is so successful, right? Why would they consider changing their format to maybe try and get more viewers and all the rest? Because they themselves have realized long league formats aren't necessarily consistent. If you give people an incentive to watch, you know, it's like, oh, we'll have a weekend game where LeBron and the Lakers get to play the top five the next top five teams in the league from either conference. It's a one-shot tournament. Whoever wins here gains a whole bunch of points towards the end of the league. All of a sudden, it's like there's massively more interest because now it's a mini playoffs halfway through the season, for example, and it can have a massive impact on how the season rates, and it requires different skills. So you can see, oh, like, you know, LeBron's a choker. But if you can consistently nail the mid-season tournaments and then chokes at the end, then you know, okay, maybe it is just pressure. And it's not just him being able to play an entire season, and then right at the end of the season, it's just injuries get to him or his team is just not as good. Like, you can see that in certain circumstances, they could be better. But Overwatch League is now trying to push a format that we've never seen consistently work at this level.
Yeah.
In esports.
But I mean, even like the English Premiership, the NFL, the NBA, all these things are like how old? 40, 50, 100 years old. They've all been around decades, and it's just because that was the simplest way to do it. You couldn't run like a one-off tournament here and there. It wasn't viable. So those are so baked into how those leagues were set up that they've never had cause to look at different alternatives. So they didn't know that, you know, maybe a tournament format is, or a tournament circuit is perhaps a better way of getting more viewers. They just don't need it because they're the only game in town, those leagues.
That's 100% it. Like, again, you're making the point about that brute forcing, right? I mean, you look at the NBA, I mean, this thing's going back how many years? And there were at some point, it was 8 teams. If you look at the Premier League, it's a similar thing. There's a smaller league. It's a smaller buy-in. There's like, you work up. Now, yes, to get a new slot in these things is near impossible, or you have to pay an insane amount of money. But to get to that point, it didn't start off that LeBron James was making $200 million sneaker deals like from day one. No. There was so much work that went into it, and Overwatch is trying to shortchange the process. The idea could potentially be good, but the execution now, as we see, is just a bit piss poor.
Yeah, like that is, I think, what everybody complains about. Is that at the end of the day, it's like you're already, like I said, you're behind the eight ball on how you're structuring your league. You're a brand new game, which means that you're not going to have the same viewership as a League of Legends, a Dota, a CSGO. You're not going to have that kind of viewership straight out of the gate, right? Now you're trying to force a format that hasn't really worked in the past in esports. It's not consistently been done. And you're not allowing any sort of built-up, there's no endemic branding allowed. So you have to create a brand new, you have to basically create a new brand to start things off.
Mm.
Then you're shutting down a large portion of the talent's ability to innovate or to do something off the cuff. It's just like every little decision you're making is going to have a massive impact at the end of the day.
Also, to make it worse is because within esports, not even within esports, within Overwatch in by itself, the one issue Overwatch has not been able to solve at all is stability in terms of the players, like in terms of teams, right? Roster stability only gets worse when you add international travel, only gets worse when you pack the calendar to this degree. And generally, when you have that kind of instability, the overall level of quality of the sport itself decreases. So not only is a situation where you're handling the actual way, the enjoyment of us watching the thing, you're actually going to decrease the level of play that's available. So if I'm traveling up and down from, let's say, now I'm in LA, got to travel to South Korea, then I got to travel to London, then I got to come back home. When is there time for me to craft some genuinely intriguing new strategy that'll really redefine the meta? Now it just becomes all about, well, we just got to get the guy who's hottest right now. That guy who's hot, cool, we'll bring you on. We're just going to win off of sheer skill and overwhelming you with sheer skill. There's not going to be as much time to organically develop good strategies. The meta, which is, already...
And they've been slow. They've been incredibly slow changing the meta. How long was GOATS around?
GOATS has been still around, though.
Yes.
And you're asking...
It's not as important. I mean, GOATS, I think, was killed off towards the end of last year. But now you just... What is it? I think it's the Orisa and... I forget the other heroes... thing, but it's like that again. Like, now sure, let's be honest, esports players will whine about any meta you create.
Yeah.
That is just how it's going to operate. The youth of esports players is, if it's there longer than 2 months, they're going to start whining because it's boring and it's not changing, right? But Blizzard has gone beyond the 2 month thing, especially like if you look at GOATS was a problem for probably 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, most of 2019. Though.
And that is a huge issue when it is in. Like, it's an incredibly difficult thing to run, and it's an incredibly, if you're, it's like watching a chess game. Like, sure, the people that are massively interested in chess and they can understand the advanced strategies of each player, they'll find it fascinating. The casual audience won't because they don't understand what's going on. Why are these two old guys just sitting there for hours trying to make a move?
Mm.
It doesn't interest them. And, like, so that is the thing. GOATS required an incredible level of team coordination and strategy to make it work. But to the layman, it's why are they picking the same heroes and just knocking it into each other forever and ever and ever? This is boring. And they just turn off and go to something else. Blizzard and Overwatch cannot afford that to happen. You have to be rapidly changing. Valve themselves have been slow to change in certain of their games, and look at the viewership drops that we've had as a result. Dota especially has had some terrible metas where people just like they're like, I'll turn on in a couple of months when the meta's new. And
yeah,
you can't afford that. Dota at least has an inbuilt number of fans, and they have a lot more fans for their players than most esports. So if they have, like, say, a 10% conversion rate from viewers to players, that's quite a bit. So again, Overwatch is such a complicated game to just try and watch and understand as a layman that doesn't play the game very regularly. It makes it very difficult when you have, on top of that, you now have a meta where it's even more technical and even more dependent on somebody understanding the game to a very high level. You can't afford that. It's going to impact viewership. And once viewership is impacted, the entire league is going to suffer.
100%. And this is also another big problem I have for Overwatch, and this is the gameplay itself, right? Is that you have situations with the goats, right? It's going on for so long, but then you don't even get a solution to it, because for me, I don't think Rolock is a solution. I feel like that's a fucking band-aid on a massive problem. Like, they don't know how to fix it, so it's like, okay, we're gonna make the ball smaller. It's like, what? For me, if I look at Overwatch as a game, like, the concept is great. You have different maps. You have the fast-pacedness and the sheer skill of an FPS with the combinations of skills and tactics from a MOBA. Concept, fucking brilliant. You have different heroes. One does this, one counters that. You have the makings of a great game, but your execution of it is horrible. I mean, I know people want to flame Dota's patches, and I know I'm the biggest fanboy, but a simple example of this is that at some point, we had a carry hero, Phantom Assassin in Dota, one of the hardest carries in the game, have ability, a slow ability, so broken that people were playing her support. They were buying a fucking Orb of Venom and slowing heroes and getting kills and stuff from the start of the game. Within a week, Ice Frog was like, this is not a thing. This is not the way I intended for my game to be played. He was nerfed. Now, Prof, do you remember the Brigitte meta where any noob could just pick up that hero and gain SR like there was no tomorrow because just how broken that hero was?
I mean, like, there was the guy that I think he went from, like, gold to, I think he was just outside, like, Grandmaster rank in a month. And all he did was spam Brigitte. Like, he was a gold player every month outside of that, but he spammed Brigitte, and he, like, I think he made it to, like, Master rank or just outside Grandmaster. It was like, and he was just like, this is dumb. I'm not even actually doing anything. Because what did they do? They created a hero that could tank, that could knock flying heroes out of the air, and could, had the strongest AoE heal in the game.
That was balanced, bro.
Like, how is that reasonable? Oh, and she was, and she had, like, a fairly high DPS output as well.
Yeah, yeah, she could literally man fight through anybody. It was ridiculous.
It's just like, what? Like, surely you see the problem. Now, that was obviously, I think that's the nadir of Overwatch, and they haven't had such overpowered heroes coming out. But it's like, how does that get through test phase?
Or even if it does get through test phase, because these things happen, right? The response has to be extremely fast. You need to have your finger on the pulse at all times. Look at what the community is actually doing. Look how the game itself is actually unfolding. And be like, okay, guys, is this what we want from this? No? Okay, let's do something else. You don't just sit there and say, well, the community will figure out a way to play past this. Or maybe they'll just end up liking it. Or, well, you know, controversy can drive more people to play the game or some dumb shit like that.
And the other thing is, it's not that Overwatch is the only esport that suffers from this. League of Legends is famous for, like, whenever they release, like, a new hero, it's just auto-banned for the first 3 months of its existence, because it's, like, the most OP thing in the game for those 3 months. And then right as they release the skins, a week later they nerf it. So that you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll just buy all the skins for this character because, like, it's definitely going to be great. And then, next week. So, I mean, props to League of Legends to Riot for, like, monetizing so well. But the problem is, when you are aiming to be a massive global league, you can't have problems like that.
Yeah.
It's too critical. It's going to eventually hurt the bottom line. And the bottom line is all that matters in these leagues.
Or if you must have problems like that, right, it can't be on the back of every other problem that we've been mentioning. You can have this problem in isolation when, by and large, everything else is working well. But it can't be in a situation where it's like, guys, we're actually not even sure if this is viable long term. And we're actually, they themselves say it's a make or break year, right? So it'll be one thing if they're like, guys, this is a launching pad for the future of the year. But if the people intricately involved are like, hey, guys, we're still not completely 100% sure and confident that this is going to succeed. But anyway, we're still going to have this cavalcade of terrible decisions along the way. Yeah, that just doesn't work.
Yeah, and then you have the people that know the most about the environment as a whole. They're walking out because they say, like, the people that we're talking to aren't listening to us.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, if this is wrong, we'll change it next year. It's, oh, this, like, if this is wrong, we're still doing it. That's the massive impression that we get from Overwatch League at the moment, is that they don't look like they want to change anything. They don't look like they want to adapt to how things have been done. Because let's be honest, like, esports as a whole is a massive, you know, is a growing industry. The only thing that seems to have worked in the past, apart from League of Legends, is tournament circuits. So why all of a sudden are we now trying to buck the trend when that trend has never seemed to go off before?
$20 that they're one of these new executives that works now for Blizzard Activision behind a lot of these decisions is some Silicon Valley tech bro who heard a TED talk about disruption once. And he's like, "Hi, I'm here coming, boys. We're going to disrupt the entire way that esports is run. Don't worry, guys."
But the problem is that's the impression that you get when you look at how these things are run.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the American, like when you see, whenever they speak to NFL owners, like for instance, Robert Kraft, when they asked him like, oh, would he ever consider buying a football front or, you know, a football team in England. And he was like, no, because he doesn't like the way that it's run. It's like, he wants everybody to be, on the same footing. And it's like, but why would you do that? And it's because of things like in football, the entire league must succeed rather than an individual team. So all of the teams that buy, if you buy a jersey for Tom Brady, that money doesn't go to the Patriots. It goes to the league as a whole, and then the Patriots get a portion.
Yeah.
But everybody gets a portion. So even the bum-ass teams, like the freaking Cincinnati Bengals that went like 2-14 the entire year, oh, they're getting mad money anyway, even though they're absolutely useless and have been for a decade or more right now. So like, what incentive is there to get better? Now, sure, it does protect you from the crazy inflation that you'll get in European soccer, but esports as a whole, because there are some certain teams that just, they can't afford to pay the players as much as they are right now. It's just, it's eventually going to create a bubble. But on the other end of things, it's like, why are you running things like that anyway?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you look at how a lot of these, especially the American leagues work, is that like the league as a whole is all they care about. Like, they'll change out owners and there's no reward for success at the end of the day. Like, sure, you can win six. I mean, look at the Patriots. They've won six Super Bowls. They've been to something like, what is that? I think 13 championship games in the last 20 years. That's like unprecedented levels of success.
Amazing level, yeah.
Right? When Manchester United achieved that, they became the biggest team in the world. The Patriots aren't even the biggest team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Dallas Cowboys are still bigger than them.
Oh, I must correct something you said about the Cowboys, them being valued at $4 billion. It's apparently $5 billion.
Wow. And they haven't been to a Super Bowl in 25 years.
Yeah.
Think about it. And they're still the biggest.
Yeah. By some margin, by like a significant
margin. Yeah, by a distance. Like, think about that. Manchester United had 25 years of success under Sir Alex Ferguson, and they became the biggest team in the world as a result of that success. The Cowboys haven't even sniffed a championship in 25 years, and they're still the biggest.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
Success doesn't breed success in those kind of environments. It's literally about how well you play your marketing game. And, you know, massive props to Jerry Jones, because he knows how to play that marketing game to the absolute T.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we've been going on about Overwatch League for a long time now in this episode, and I think this tweet from Sir Scoots like summarizes our like esports insiders' feelings about this. He's like, I'm gonna quote him here. Overwatch fans wonder why us non-Overwatch fans care so much about the Overwatch League. It's simple. It has been touted as the future of esports. It has brought millions in investment into the space. If it fails and sends shockwaves to the mainstream, it's not just Overwatch League is going to be called in bad investment, but esports as a whole. Those of us who have been around longer than Overwatch League have seen this happen before with other projects and other games, so we are naturally nervous. And that's kind of the point, right? We've said this on the podcast so many times. If Overwatch fucks out, we're all going to take a hit.
Yeah, that's the big worry, is because Overwatch is, at the moment, in the mainstream, the poster boy for esports.
Yeah,
and that's what everybody's so terrified about, is because if that goes sideways, everything goes sideways. And then we sit with the 2008 recession where esports as a whole was basically wrecked for the next 2-3 years. Because nobody had the money and nobody was willing to invest. Now, this might have a bigger impact than that because that was an outside influence that caused that, the global recession that screwed them. What happens if this is like, oh, this is a proof of concept and the proof of concept fails? You're not gonna try that concept again, not for many, many years.
Yeah, there would be zero incentive to do so. In fact, it would actually be an irresponsible business decision to do so.
Exactly. And that's the people that are investing in esports right now is investors, business people that are willing to take a chance. If that chance goes sour, they're not coming back.
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to throw good money off the bat at that point.
And you know, it'll become much more of a niche market, and niche markets always have... Then it becomes a situation where all you get are boom-bust cycles. We don't actually have a consistent, stable development for esports. It just becomes this thing of every now and then there's people willing to throw money that side and they do it, but as soon as they get any kind of positive return, they bounce. We don't want the global landscape of esports, right, to look like what South African esports looked like for like 2 years after the whole Quest debacle and shit went south. I think we're in a really good position to speak about what the negative impacts could be, having seen it firsthand and being like, yo, guys, none of us can afford for this to fail, but you're also taking every available action, which almost guarantees that it will.
Yeah, I mean, the South African esports scene has literally seen the bubble burst. Like, we literally seen the dream, and we've seen the dream just go away and now after effects from it, right? Yeah. And the sad thing about the Overwatch League for me is that I think they did, like, Nate Danza's vision and the Overwatch League vision is not an inherently bad vision. I think there is potential for what the Overwatch League wants to accomplish. I think Overwatch was a great game to do this. Like I said earlier, the fact that it combines MOBA and FPS together. I don't think a game like Dota 2, no matter how good it is, will ever break it out of the niche market, because that's exactly what Dota is. It's a niche. But Overwatch probably was the game that had the potential to be like, wow, this is so cool and quirky, but it's something we can still follow because it's people shooting each other, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, not Overwatch was, I think, a succinct metaphor for how this can turn out. Early Overwatch is like Logic 2015. And then as things got worse over time, now you get Logic 2019. Where it's like, yeah, maybe white guy shouldn't rap because he fucked it up for everybody.
Oh, that's savage.
Oh, I'm just meaning.
You might hold me Logic out of this, man.
I would
have given the Star Wars analogy, like they were the chosen one, but nobody fucking chose them. They chose themselves, ruined it themselves. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about Overwatch. We've cried now for literally an hour. I don't know if you have more to add, Prophecy.
I mean, the problem is, like, it's disappointing to see this, because there's so many people that have advised them, and at the start, they looked like they had the right idea. The whole thing that they wanted to do, or that they said they wanted to do at the beginning, was first half of the year is a league, second half of the year is tournaments.
Yeah.
Sounds perfect, right? I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? You have the big league in the first half of the year. I mean, think about the NBA. So the first half of the year is just the regular NBA, or the first half of the season is the regular NBA. And then the rest of the season is just a series of small tournaments. So you get to see, you know, like, LeBron's team, you know, does pretty well, but LeBron himself is shaky in the big games. And then all of those things count together to give you a better idea of how the league as a whole works. Now it's just, what Blizzard did was they said that, and then they just actively worked in a way to kill off all the third-party tournaments.
Yeah.
And made it impossible for those tournaments to have any sort of ability to generate money, to even pull the big teams, and they killed it. So they can say that they want to do that, but what they're doing actively counters what, you know, what they're actually doing counters what they said they were going to do.
But yeah, they probably thought we can make more money this way, so let's do that.
So yeah, this is a good place to end on. This is the 2020, the breakout year, allegedly, for the Overwatch League. So there's going to be a poll that goes up with this podcast. Do you think the Overwatch League is going to be a success and breakthrough this year, or do you think it's all going to come crashing down? That's it from us, folks. Esports Central podcast episode number 71. I didn't say in the intro, but I remembered for the outro. Thank you all for tuning in, and goodbye.
Cheers.
Download Capitalism.